Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
It can only end on a November afternoon in Ann Arbor. They have to go up and punch the bully and knock him out.
Russ Gullinger.
One-handed Ryan Day versus two-handed 86-year-old Lou Holtz in a cage match. And let's just make it even better. Let's put the cage at the big house.
And SI's Pat Forte.
Now, everything Marcus Freeman is trying to live down, Ryan Day is trying to live down. So, you know, they had a lot of tough plays in that game, but that was not one of them. That was not some ode to toughness right there.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod presented by Invesco QQQ. And I got to tell you, did not think I'd be discussing this again, but when we have the head coach at Ohio State, possibly the most popular college football team in the country, in a back and forth with an 86-year-old Lou Holtz. Octogenarian Lou Holtz has not coached anywhere since 2004 when he left his fourth program on probation. I love Lou. Lou's a good quote. Lou's a good quote. He's interesting. You know, obviously, he makes these comments last week, the day before the Ohio State-Notre Dame game. Notre Dame being one of those four schools. He also won a national title there. We thought they were pretty benign, saying Ryan Day has lost to Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, Michigan twice. And really, that's the compliment, okay, if you're a head coach.
Right. That's your list of losses. Not bad.
How about the Kansas City Chiefs? Are they in there? That's all I've lost to, Lou. I would have just been like, first sentence is all I need to know. And everyone who beats them does so because they're more physical than Ohio State. I think Notre Dame will take that same approach, is pretty much what he said. Ryan Day flips out, goes complete WWE. We covered this on the Monday show. I'd like to know where Lou Holtz is right now. What he said about our team, I cannot believe. This is a tough team right here. We're proud to be from Ohio. Goes off on all this. It's always been Ohio against the world. Most of his players aren't from Ohio. Until it'll continue to be Ohio. It's just good times. Anyway, the problem with fighting with Lou Holtz is he's available for comment.
Lou has nothing else to do.
He's got nothing going on. Yeah.
The man never met a camera he didn't love, okay? Like, Lou Holtz is going to... So he goes on OutKick and comes back at him, of course. He doesn't want to talk about Michigan and 0-2, Holt said. He doesn't want to talk about the big game coming up against Penn State and against Michigan again. He's a great coach, done a tremendous job. He's a great offensive mind. Ohio State's a good football team, but I don't think they're a great football team. And he can go after me all he wants. Of course he can. This is great. Lou Holtz is getting some shine. And hey,
some people remember that Lou Holtz is still alive.
Live it up, Lou.
I know. He's live it up from the dead.
The fourth probation coach will sell his ethical leadership book, available on Amazon. Anyway, this is where we're at. And Ryan Day hasn't come back on it, but here's the thing. Now everyone else is commenting. I think clearly this is, I think Reese Davis had the right line. Like, this is Jim. Jim Harbaugh is just in his head. Jim Harbaugh just right now lives in Ryan Day's head. And the quote that Ryan Day will bristle and just, I think, just disturbs him the most is, some people are born on third base and they don't realize it, or whatever that line was. So, Pat, as we move forward, what's the latest in this? What are your latest thoughts on this? I don't know. I mean, we got to have some kind of fight. We're going to cover the fights.
Oh, we love the fights. We love the fights. And this is a lingering high profile fight. That's for sure. That, again, like, it was a non-existent fight until Ryan Day breathed oxygen into it or poured gasoline on it, because nobody either listened to Lou Holtz or remembered that he even said it, especially in the aftermath of that thrilling, epic victory. So, yes, Lou Holtz retired and in love with the spotlight that he no longer gets. Boy, if anybody else wants to talk to Lou Holtz and get him to dig into Ryan Day, he's available, that's for sure. The thing here, there's zero doubt that this is all Michigan driven in Ryan Day's head. And it absolutely has killed him that they've not only been thumped by Michigan twice, but they've had their nose rubbed in it twice. And there's only, I think, Dan, you wrote it. I don't want to steal your line, but there's only one way to get past the notion that you're not tough, and that's to play Michigan, beat Michigan, and not get run over by Michigan. And I tell you what, I wrote something Thursday for SI on just going back over kind of the chaos that happens in a close game at the end of a game and substitutions and all those sort of things. But you go back and look at the winning play, 11 on 10, Notre Dame blew up Ohio State's tough offensive line. I mean, the left defensive end just absolutely obliterates the tight end, gets inside his face and collapses inside, as does the guy next to him. From the right side, safety blitzes and nobody touches him. I mean, they, like, if Chip Traynham doesn't keep his knees up, that's a no gain or a 1 yard loss, and they are trying to live it down. Everything Marcus Freeman is trying to live down, Ryan Day is trying to live down. So, you know, they had a lot of tough plays in that game, but that was not one of them. That was not some ode to toughness right there. That was pretty soft blocking, frankly.
We talk about how we love fights. What if they did fight? you know, 86 versus 45 or 44. But here's the thing. Let's even it out. All right. Whatever Ryan Day's dominant hand is, I'm assuming he's right-handed, tie it behind his back. One-handed Ryan Day versus two-handed 86-year-old Lou Holtz in a cage match. And let's just make it even better. Let's put the cage, right, on at the Big House in Michigan Stadium. All right? And there we are. Right? All the Michigan fans come, right? They're rooting on Lou Holtz. Come on, guys.
Ryan Day bare-chested.
I don't know that Lou Holtz is all that popular in Ann Arbor either.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
I think Michigan fans enjoy it. They're like, popcorn here. Right. Yeah. Like, let's just, right. What's that little, we don't need Lou Holtz.
No, I saw Lou on the field. He's not ready to fight anybody. One-handed, two-handed.
Even one-handed.
The fact that he is on the field is enough at that age.
That he made
we
want to
keep
field.
Lou some.
Yeah.
I make fun of Lou a little bit, but we want him safe. Let's not have a total fight. I just think that because one of Ryan Day's thing was the narrative, this isn't a tough team, ends now. We had one half that we weren't tough. I don't know. I saw a half in Ann Arbor. I saw a whole game in Ann Arbor. Then I saw at least a half in Columbus last year.
Watch it. You're going to get called out on national TV. Where is Dan Wetzel at? I want to know. Where is Dan Wetzel?
Four cocktails deep at my patio watching the game, Ryan. I think it's his thing that this ends now. He's dying to have it end. It can't end on a September night in South Bend. Right. They could have mauled him and run up. They could have won 222-0 and rushed for 1,000 yards. It can only end on a November afternoon in Ann Arbor. Yep. They have to go up and punch the bully and knock him out. That's where this thing is. 3 years ago, you sat there and said, Harbaugh has to beat Ohio State. This is the nature of this rivalry. Urban Meyer won a national title at Ohio State, 2014. He then proceeded to have ungodly amounts of talent and blow season after season in unconscionable losses to Iowa, Purdue, right?
Yep.
They had the best team some of those years.
Yeah,
he is beloved and literally owns a bar where he's been known to maybe meet some younger blonde women after Jacksonville Jaguar games, called the 7-0 Pub, right, or something like that.
Right? I don't know what it's called.
I thought it's called something like 7-0 is in it. Like
celebration of beating Michigan. Yes,
that's it. We beat Michigan, and it's like a lot of people would go. And Urban Meyer did a great job at Ohio State, so I'm not really critical. But you could see some Ohio State fans going, "Man, we could have two or three national titles here." Like
2015 team was easily the most talented,
right? But instead, it's like, "Hey, man, never lost that team up north."
Yeah,
he'd throw guys out. NFL scouts would show up in a blue shirt, and he'd throw them out of the facility. Like, geez, is that a good thing? Like, his kids are trying to get drafted. you just, this is the nature of this rivalry. And so you could beat Notre Dame all you want. You could beat Penn State. You could beat Georgia. You could beat anybody. And that would be great. And that's Ohio State. But in this narrative, whether it is fair or not, the whole tough bit isn't really my favorite thing, because they're plenty tough. But whatever it is, you have to walk into the big house and you have to absolutely knock them out. And that'll happen in November.
Or it won't. One or the other.
Or it won't. So, yeah. And you're right. No one's going to be going, oh, but yeah. yeah, Blake Corum at 114 and Donovan Edwards at 98 and JJ yeah. McCarthy scrambled and they moved you on the line. But remember that night when you scored 11 on 10 in South Bend? That's right. We won't mention it anymore. Mm-hmm. That's not just how this is going to work. And that's you got handed the keys to the Ferrari and you almost won a national title last year. But I think Ohio State fans are like, well, you got to beat Michigan. I mean, you're Ohio State. Got to be. That's just it. Yeah. That's just it.
Yeah. That's the expectations for what they have won in terms of national championships. The expectations are higher at Ohio State than anywhere else in the country. Higher than Alabama, because Alabama does win titles. So you become expectant of winning titles. Ohio State, 2014, 2002, 1968, I believe. Then like 1954. A couple in the 50s. I mean, it's not like they reel off groups of 3, 4, 5 titles like Miami or Alabama did. I mean, so
it's a big,
but the expectation is to win them. So
let me ask this, Ross, what do you think about this? If Alabama loses to Auburn but wins the national title, and Ohio State loses to Michigan but wins the national, and as this playoff expands, we're going to see that more often. Which fan base looks back on a season and has that little, yeah, but ping of regret? Obviously, if Ohio State if Georgia's field goal goes wide and Ohio State goes and beats TCU, wins the national championship, any sane-minded Buckeye fan is like, what a great season, won the national championship, right? But in the back of some percentage of the fans' minds that, yeah, but we didn't beat Michigan. Which one means more? Which percent do you think is bigger? Is it Ohio State or is it like an Alabama going, great, we won the national title, but yeah, lost to Auburn. I just can't stand it.
Well, I can't exactly remember, but didn't Alabama do that? Didn't Alabama lose to Auburn over the last, right? Wasn't it one of the?
I think they did, didn't they?
Like 15 or 17 or 18, and they won it all. Yeah, I looked that up, Pat, but I think that's right. I think Alabama lost the Iron Bowl and then got in the playoff, won the SEC championship, got in the playoff, and won it. I would imagine that.
It's Pat, easily Pat, solved because there's science on that. I mean, I'm
yeah, right.
Throwing
yeah, sure.
Just
sure.
Question yeah, at you. 12.3% of the fans.
I'm going to guess that more percentage at Ohio State would look back. But we lost to Michigan.
I think it's bigger too.
Yeah.
I think it's bigger than that. There's certain schools, like, I'm not so sure Michigan State fan wouldn't be happy if they're like, you go 6-6, but you beat Michigan every year. There's a percentage be like, all right,
yeah,
or it's like 8-4. Would you rather be 10-2 and lose to Michigan,
right,
or 7-5 and beat Michigan State? Like, there, and there's other rivalries right that like that, and you'd be like, I'll take that victory.
Yeah, I think Pat mentioned, like, there, you know, Alabama has won so many championships, especially recently, but even going back, you know, the last 40 years 50 years going back to the Bear, that the focus is such on and the expectation is such on a national championship as opposed to beating Auburn, where Ohio State, not that the focus isn't on a championship, but it does feel like it's more on beating Michigan.
Yeah, so 2017, I covered this game. Alabama lost at Auburn 28-14 and then made the playoff and then won with the great Tua, you know, mm-hmm. second half insertion. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's Georgia.
Yeah, I haven't heard anybody talk about that loss to Auburn.
You don't hear about that a lot. You really don't.
No, you hear about 2nd and 26, the touchdown to Devontae Smith.
I don't know. Maybe I'm overplaying it.
Yeah, I do. I think that it's an overemphasis, if anything. I mean, you can't tell them. You know, I mean, the Ohio State-Michigan emphasis is awesome, and it's what makes that rivalry awesome. But I don't think it necessarily serves the two teams that well after that game is over, from what we've seen. And Jim Harbaugh said this summer at Big Ten Media Days that they have now instituted a daily beat Georgia period. They've always had a daily beat Ohio period, and now they have a daily beat Georgia. And I think that's a good thing to remind your team, hey, we are not just trying to beat Ohio State. We're also trying to beat the best and win a national championship. And I think, you know, looking at the way Michigan's played in the playoff, it looked kind of like, hey, we shot our bullet beating Ohio State. And I think that there can be a little bit of a, you know, you're a little bit of an emotional lull coming out of that game. It's so big.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny. I always bring this up every once in a while, but like, and I haven't been to a Cleveland Cavalier game since LeBron left, but during the two eras at LeBron, when you'd be at a Cleveland Cavalier playoff game, right in the middle of the NBA playoffs, and to get the crowd booing, like when the other team's the free throw line, they'd flash stuff on the Jumbotron. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they would flash to get the crowd riled up was the Michigan logo. Mm. It's a Cavalier. It's an NBA game, not even in Columbus. It's in Cleveland. Now Cleveland's obviously a big Ohio State fan, but like that's the level of angst that goes on there. So we'll do that. All right. Wanted to do a little of this in the SEC. It's not the slate we had, but to me, this is like a put up or shut up potential pivot, potential ladder weekend of a bunch of teams. And like seasons could go, there aren't a whole lot of options for great seasons anymore, but they're also like good or, oh boy, we're in trouble. And I see these pivot games, and I guess I'm not sure how the game would be structured, but you know, take a look at the SEC schedule. I guess of these games, or write it down. Florida at Kentucky, A&M at Arkansas, LSU at Ole Miss, Georgia, we'll skip that one. That one's different. South Carolina, Tennessee, and I'm going to skip Alabama, Mississippi State, because I don't really see those as really even, the Georgia and Alabama games. But South Carolina, Tennessee, LSU, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Arkansas, and Florida, Kentucky. And no offense to Missouri, Vanderbilt, but Missouri better win that game, or they're doing great. They're 4-0, they're winning. Who needs a win of those four games, those eight teams, the most? And we'll just do a little draft. How about that?
Sounds good. That?
I'm such a good at constructing stupid games. It's really
the thing
my
is, though, but this is one of the great things about the SEC is you get national championship contenders, but you also get that next tier of teams that are really good and often very evenly matched. And these games, I guarantee, they will be wild. There will be stuff happening. People will care. So it's going to be a great weekend for the SEC.
And huge fan bases that really care.
Exactly.
All those teams have huge fan bases where if you go to other leagues and you're like, hey, you know, what if BC doesn't win? Okay, whatever. Purdue or some of the ones don't have this level of like, oh my God, Josh Heupel better get, you know, like all of a sudden you're off the thing. All right, who needs to win the most? We can start with whoever wants to start. Who's ready? Who's got a pick?
I'm ready.
Go for it, Ross.
Ross, go get him. Number one pick.
Well, I think my number one pick is the Aggies. They play Arkansas in Dallas, big rivalry game. And, you know, the expectations entering the season, everybody knows about the Jimbo Fisher, the contract, the pressure on him to win. And then you're playing a team that you've beaten. I'm counting back on the series. It looks like 11 of the last 12 years, something like that. A&M has beaten Arkansas. They lost 2 years ago. And this one, it's always a dog fight. 2-point win last year, 10-point win by Arkansas the year before, 11 points, 3 points, a touchdown, overtime, multiple overtime games. Three overtime games these teams have played in the last like 7 years. Texas A&M won it all. So pressure on the Aggies, I think, to keep rolling. Because, you know, since the Miami loss, they've won a couple games. And that's my number one pick.
All right, springing back. Connor Wegman out for the season at quarterback. Max Johnson is back. Max Johnson doesn't hit the portal. gets his job back.
There you go. Right. Former LSU quarterback. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's
Brad's son.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. That one, it's interesting. A&M has won the games, but Arkansas almost always covers. Arkansas's like 4-0-1 against the spread the last five. And one of those in there, I think it was one, where A&M won on a field goal at the end where the, remember Ross, we did the story where the uprights were longer.
Yes.
And I can't even remember the details. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the NFL uprights.
And did it hit the upright? I can't remember.
Yes.
The ball skipped off the top of the upright.
The top of the upright.
And they called it no good. So this must have been an Arkansas field goal. Called it no good, and the Aggies won. But if they had been playing in a college stadium, it probably would have been good.
All right, let's just make it of the four games, because we do these eight teams that will just... Which one do you think is the bigger lad? Next one.
All right, I'm going Florida-Kentucky. Yeah, I just think Billy Napier finally got some good positive energy going by beating Tennessee. But now you got to sustain it, and this is a game Florida fans absolutely believe and demand to win every freaking year. And the fact that they haven't won a couple in recent years has really perturbed them. I mean, there was a stretch, Spurrier and before Spurrier, I think it was 1986 to whenever, where like sometime in the 2000s, they did not lose to Kentucky. So for Florida, it's like a birthright. We must stay ahead of Kentucky at all times. And for Kentucky, it's like, hey, you're not that much ahead of us. We're coming for you. Kentucky is undefeated. Still untested, hadn't played anybody yet. Got some interesting pieces. Devin Leary, the transfer QB. Ray Davis, transfer running back from Vanderbilt, has really flashed for him. So, to me, that's a fascinating game, and I would say Florida, I would put as the team that really needs it.
Okay. I'm going to go with Ole Miss and LSU. Only slightly, because that, I don't know. LSU needs this. This is a game they should win. They traditionally can beat Ole Miss. They're trying to dig out of the loss to Florida State and still stay in contention. And so they absolutely have. They lose this game. This season is, there's not a lot of hope to it. You're just down to beating Bama or something like that. Ole Miss on the other side, what kind of season is this? What kind of program do you have? Last week's loss to Alabama is excusable because you're playing at Alabama. You're the underdog. It's extremely hard to win at Alabama, but the performance was just so uninspired. And Lane Kiffin makes so much noise, which we certainly appreciate. And then of course, turn on him. And he makes so much noise. Like this week I saw something was like, oh, they're Juice Kiffin. The dog is trying to do a mascot art. And it's like, there's a lot of just like noise, which is fun.
Yeah.
But like, when are you going to beat a good team? How good can you guys be? And it's Ole Miss. You don't have to beat LSU. They only have Georgia after this. Like they could then beat all the other ladder games and end up 9-3 and it'd be a pretty good season. But I think LSU absolutely has to win, but I think Ole Miss for the sake of like, what kind of program would it be? Winning a game at home against LSU would be rather, rather significant. So I think both programs really, really need it.
Such a great rivalry game too. I love the LSU Ole Miss game. I was obviously from the Mississippi coast, born in South Louisiana, and covered LSU for years. And this game is just, it's always one of the more exciting and just historically going back, always a good one. It's just, two of the top like tailgating fan bases, in the country that always go back and forth in their tailgating. And they're very opposite. I think tailgating, the way they do tailgating, they're very opposite in just in general as fan bases. So this is always a fun one.
No grills in the Grove, right? No flame.
No flame in the Grove. Yeah.
The Grove. So
the Tigers wouldn't stand for that on LSU's campus.
They would have burned the Grove. That's why they would have burned the Grove down like 50 years ago, celebrating a Billy Cannon punt return. The Grove would have burned. Yeah. Someone would have spilled a pot of jambalaya and somehow set off hit, and it would have hit some bourbon and gone. It's over. Yeah.
I felt a little bad for Brian Kelly on the SEC teleconference this week. He was asked, like, Brian, growing up in Massachusetts, did you have any real sense for like Burt Jones against Archie Manning and that rivalry? And he's like,
no.
He kind of faked his way through it, you know? I mean, it was like, come on. No, that's, I mean, I wanted to ask the person who asked the question, what was your sense of, you know, Massachusetts politics back then? You got any?
Right.
Speaking of Massachusetts, I think this is the game, the only SEC game or the first SEC game that the new NCAA president, Charlie Baker, attended last year, I believe. I think he made mention of that. He was like blown away by the LSU Ole Miss game.
The NCAA president SEC football. The NCAA president has attended one football game?
No, SEC. Yeah, SEC football game, I believe. I think he made mention, it was either last year or maybe even a couple years ago, that he attended his first SEC football game, and I believe it was LSU Ole Miss in Baton Rouge, and he was like blown away. You know, it was like, boy, that's a different culture and experience than the folks in Massachusetts. You know, up here, we grew up on hockey. You know, it's like one of those things. And I remember him, this past spring talking about that.
I don't wonder if he ever went to a Patriots game even. Charlie seems a little stiff. I don't know.
He was a basketball guy.
He's a big baseball fan, too.
Baseball,
baseball grew up on the Red Sox, I think.
Yeah. This is definitely some Gary Bettman takes over the NHL and tries to act like he was a hockey fan all along. Probably not.
I'll tell you that reference, but it was awkward
for a long time. It was like, you even know how this game is played? And I get it. You're hired to like negotiate TV deals, not to like coach the games. But it's like, you ever seen a hockey game? Like, I don't know. You really.
And I think one of the things is, a lot of people probably wouldn't have admitted that, right? And he doesn't hide behind it. He's like, it was my first one. It was amazing. Never experienced anything like that. And so
better than faking it. Like I did remember some old game. He should have got back. But do you remember when Steve Grogan led the Patriots past the Bills in 19, you know, whatever? Like, no, it wasn't in the Boston Globe. I was like 8 years old. What do you want me to do? I don't know what's going on down here. All right. Final game then is South Carolina, Tennessee. And this one is also a doozy. Ross, who needs it more?
I don't know. It's a tough one. Shane's, you know, obviously got it rolling at South Carolina, but they've had a couple of hiccups in games they really could have won. I mean, gosh, they kept up with Georgia right there leading at halftime and it was North Carolina, right? You know, that one kind of came down to the end. I mean, they got beat pretty soundly, I guess, in the fourth quarter. And then Tennessee, We knew they were going to be a drop-off, right, in last year's team. New quarterback, Joe Milton, and a lot of other new players. Lost a lot on offense, lost offensive coordinator. At home, I'm guessing there's more pressure, you know, in Tennessee to win this game. So, I think the pressure probably is on the Vols. So another good spot for Shane Beamer and the Gamecocks to spring the upset.
Yeah, Shane likes his upset spots. But that thing, Tennessee's going to be really locked in for this game. Certainly the fans are, because their loss last year in Columbia ended their playoff hopes. And a real shocker at that point. Tennessee had been rolling along and then could not stop South Carolina at all. I remember I had just covered Illinois, Michigan, and came back to my hotel and was watching that. And South Carolina's just flying up and down the field on Tennessee. It was really shocking. And so Tennessee fans, that one rubbed them raw.
Yeah, they got to have it. Can't lose two in a row to South Carolina. That's why I think South Carolina could withstand the loss. That's why I didn't have this higher. Maybe more. All right, we'll be back right after this message. All right, big noon game this weekend is USC at Colorado. Obviously, for competitive interest, this took a hit when the Oregon Ducks absolutely destroyed Colorado last week up in Eugene. A quick side note on Eugene, we have our botanists out there, the botanist listeners, or anyone who can identify a tree.
Redwood.
Say it's not a redwood. That tree you took a photo of, I posted on my Twitter account, not a red one. Someone called it a giant sequoia. I don't know, but not a red one. So, Ross,
you put a poll out there. What are the numbers on the poll?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I did put a poll out.
Please. I almost voted in it. I thought about voting in it.
I did vote in it, and I voted no, it's not a redwood, because I knew better.
Okay, the poll was, is that a redwood? Yeah. First off, they cut. I mean, I think a redwood's like don't those things are sacred. They wouldn't have cut the trees, the limbs off so the power line could
Dan.
Go. Okay. Is that a redwood? Yes, got 12%.
Oh.
No, got 67.4%. And what? That was the third option. got 20.7%. I don't know.
What? Got yeah, more got than the more yes. More than vote. Yes. Great.
Yeah, you can get
how many
you can
not
vote
a good sign.
Yes,
good
no, sign. Or what?
Not a good
how many
sign.
Total votes?
Only 987. I think I kind of buried
it.
It's
a pretty good
my
sample.
Feet.
It's a pretty good sample.
Yeah. So, yeah, not so about 120 people thought yes, and everyone else thought no or what, or they just were like, this is too stupid to vote.
My
clearly not a redwood. Anyway,
my future is not in tree identification.
No, no. Like you said, Gulf Coast kid. Yeah. There are no, not a whole lot of trees down there. Everything's a redwood.
Southern Gulf Coast boys like, ooh, ooh, it's a tall tree. Must be a redwood.
Must be a redwood.
Send it to the family. Hey, Dad, look at this redwood in the neighborhood. And nobody knew in the family. Like the family group texted was like, wow, a redwood. Look at that. Right in the neighborhood. Nobody
Ross
knew.
Is like with Charlie Brown's Christmas tree, calling it a redwood.
We're used to palm trees and oak trees, you know?
Palm trees and oak trees. There you go.
There you go. Pines, yeah.
Anyway, game is happening. I'm not playing guess the ratings. This could be monster. I would expect. I don't know if we're are we picking this game? Probably, right? Are we contractually
I think so.
Obligated.
Okay. I think so.
Anyway, I don't know where Colorado is going to invent a defense in the next few days. So Caleb Williams is going to have some fun, but this USC defense is not nearly as good as Oregon. So I would expect a little more out of that. As we would expect, you guys can comment on the game. Much of the action will be off the field. We're getting reports from there's a slew of really good recruits coming. Five stars, Texas A&M recruit Cam Coleman.
Celebs.
Ryan Wingo. Yeah, Jordan Davis. And all sorts of good recruits are coming up there to check out the game. And then we have celebs. Lil Wayne is potentially, according to Buffs Beat, is going to be back, potentially bringing out doing the walkout again. DJ Khaled will be there also. So we could have a
wow.
Good thing this isn't the old days of Tupac and Biggie and all that. Yeah. Things get dicey somewhere. Jay-Z is supposed to be there. I mean,
good Lord.
LeBron James. And maybe Bronny. I don't know about that. Bronny have practice. Like, what is going on with Bronny? Are they rooting for USC? Matthew McConaughey, noted Texas fan, is supposed to be there.
Bandwagoner extraordinaire.
Yeah.
Oh, Longhorns must be on a bye.
Minister of Culture, right? Isn't the Minister of Culture?
Yeah.
At Texas. Anyway, we have all of that going on. It should be wild, big recruiting weekend. Quick thoughts on the game. I guess we'll pick it later, but we could discuss what you think of this scene that's going to be there. They're not backing down on scene at Colorado.
Mm-mm. No, scene is what they're selling most of right now, and they should keep selling it. I mean, if you're bringing in all those recruits and all these celebrities, that's a fantastic combination for you. Again, it's another big noon kickoff, so you get that real big platform to show everything off. It's going to be a 10 a.m. start out there, so we'll see if everybody's up bright and early and ready to go. They were the last time they played big noon, and it was a 10 a.m.er. I was there for that, so I think it's going to be fantastic. And I think this is going to be much more competitive than the Oregon game for several reasons. I can go into that when we actually make the pick, but I think it's going to be a decent game.
Yeah, I'd expect Colorado to at least move the ball somewhat and have more than, you know, 23 yards at halftime offensively against USC, because they've shown some vulnerability defensively. But yeah, I keep thinking, you know, that when does the viewership and the kind of the Deion train type of thing, like, slow down? Like, how many losses does it take? How many blowouts, whatever, does it take? And USC can, they can certainly win handedly and slow this thing really down. But you know, part of me doesn't want it to slow down because it has been exciting and it's been fun to watch and a great story and a different story in college sports. But something tells me that this is going to end poorly again for the Buffaloes.
Well, yeah. And I mean, look, they got Arizona State, Stanford, and then a bye week. So it's going to cool off, if only because the matchups are going to slow down. Next thing you know, they're at UCLA on October 28th. The season at that point, the focus season will be way more into playoffs and big games. So this is, I think, the last week in the season. I have found it amusing how many, you know, there's like the conflict between all these new fans and then some of the guys, some of the older fans, the ones who like to, I mean, look, we're talking about a 3-1 team, but we just talked about a bunch of 2-2 teams too. You know, it's college football, it's exciting, but there's sort of this like guardian of the game bit where it's like,
oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I really appreciate the game. And so this is just a new, they're not really that good and they won't last. Look at this. This is the kind of weekend where he recruits. Now, most of those guys that just mentioned were all wide receivers. He's got to get some guys, some game wreckers in the line, but this is where he builds up the program with these kind of recruiting weekends. It's a big game. Sorry that we're talking about a team that's extremely popular, interesting, and exciting.
You know, that has riveted the general public for a month.
What about the Sun Belt? Well, you know, we get to those teams too. But I want to mention this about Prime, because he gets thrown a question this week from my buddy Sean Keeler up in Denver about Cormani McClain, who's the number one cornerback, the number two overall recruit in the country, or top five, whatever it was last year. He flips him from Florida, and he's supposed to come in and be like Travis Hunter, not play two ways, but lockdown corner. Incredible talent. He has barely seen the field this year. He did play against Oregon, but as Prime said, I would have thrown anyone out there at that point. We were so bad. And I mentioned the other day about Prime being all things to all people. And there are people who hate him or think of him as flashy, style, all that. Give me my theme music, right? No problem. But he also is just unapologetically demanding. And so he unloads on Cormani McClain. He goes, they said, what does Cormani McClain have to do to get on the field? He doesn't even let it finish. Study, prepare, be on time for meetings. Show up for the darn meetings. I also love the way he says darn. Damn. He said he quit swearing as a sophomore in college. And so he says darn.
Darn and bull junk and stuff
bull
like that.
Junk. Bull junk. Yeah. If you're using the term just a replacement, isn't it still a swear? Isn't it? Isn't the intent?
No.
The intent is still there.
Now give us our workaround.
Darn. All right. Understand what we're doing as a scheme. Want to play this game. Desire to play this game. Desire to be the best of the game. He talks about basically he's getting reports on film and noting that he didn't watch it a whole lot of it is what he intimated. Cormani comes back.
He gets screen time reports, right? It's against the NCAA rules, actually, I think. So he admitted violating NCAA rules on tracking like players or something like that. I remember, I think
it's supposed to be voluntary to watch film.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they'll go after him. It's not a cheeseburger. He's about to learn about what not a cheeseburger is. Because you know those guys down in Indy are sitting around. We can't catch anyone doing anything. We're completely incompetent. Put a violation on the most popular guy in the whole thing because Cormani's not watching film. Look out, Prime. Look out. Cormani comes back on social media and says, you'll be surprised what happens behind closed doors. Basically there's a lot of the way it's written it's written in teenager. So I'm inserting English. Everything ain't just what it seems. I just thought my kids would write too. So not blaming Cormani, but pushing through politics every day is the only way out. Okay. So here's my thing. He's trying to build these recruits. He's chasing the best players. He gets this great guy. I'm not saying he's the only coach that would do this, but how many coaches would just literally be like, I'm just going to dust our top five recruit and I don't care because we'll just get another one. He's basically saying, hit the portal, buddy. I'm bringing in more. You are my Louie, but Louie's got some defects. I'm bringing in some new Louie. Like, he doesn't care who people are. Like, oh, he picked on these poor Colorado kids who went 1-11. He's picking on this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I I can't really think of another coach in this era who would do that. Maybe the only other one's a basketball coach. Rick Pitino would do this kind of thing. Like with Roderick Rhodes when he was the number one recruit and he didn't think he was working hard enough and stuff. So, but to publicly put him on blast like that, the thing I've said about Dion all along, he will say publicly what other coaches only say privately. And this is a great example of that, of like, yeah, he's not working hard enough. He's not putting in the effort, and I'm just going to go ahead and air it and share it. And yes, with the knowledge and security in my back pocket that I'll just get more guys if he's mad and he leaves. That's fine. Because I think if you're trying to coach with just a complete fear of, you know, if you can't coach guys hard because you're afraid they're going in the portal, then you're probably already setting up yourself for a loss.
Yeah, we talked about it a lot, really, the last several months. But he's just – Dion just does things and says things that, yeah, other coaches don't. And it's kind of refreshing in a way, you know, especially for, like, us media, right? It's refreshing because he's just kind of, like, brutally honest. I mean, a great example of this was after the loss to Oregon. I think a lot of people thought he'd come in and he would be – not the guy that we've seen in the past, that he would be, you know, just quiet or whatever and not wanting to take questions and moaning about the loss or making excuses or whatever. And of course he wasn't. He wasn't that guy. He wanted to take more questions. He told the SID that he would take more questions. And he proceeded to just again be brutally honest about his team and the way they played. So he continues to do the opposite of a lot of coaches, and this is another kind of good example of it. And I think, you know, when it comes to recruiting, you know, parents are a big part of the recruitment process. And I think the parents, the moms and dads that watch that, right, that news conference and hear Dion say that, probably like to hear that in a lot of ways. I think there are parents who want to send their kid to Dion to like learn, you know, work ethic and all that stuff and want their kid to have kind of the demanding coach. And so it's going to work probably in his favor on the recruiting trail too. And I assume that he knows that because everything I think that he does and says is, you know, thought out.
Yeah, I think almost everything works out for him. So he just one of those guys kind of cruises through life.
Hey, Dan, real quick. You know who else was a master of the cuss word workaround?
Who's that?
Probably the college coach who has less in common with Deion Sanders than anyone in history. Roy Williams.
Mm.
Cornpone Roy. Frickin' He liked frickin'. He used frickin' a lot.
What didn't he say?
Dadgum.
Gaddummit. 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 Yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm. Dern. Come to the Dern meeting. Love it. Ross, quickly update on this playoff, and you had some other realignment news. Do we have realignment news here?
Here's the update on the playoff, Dan.
Next year's playoff.
Yeah.
For those not paying attention.
That's the update.
Okay, no update. All right, how about realignment? Yeah, they're not voting.
Update. Yeah.
Yeah, good
not
meeting.
Voting. Yeah, they're going back and forth with you know. They didn't even discuss the format in the meeting. They were supposed to discuss the format. Multiple commissioners said they were planning to discuss the format, didn't even discuss it. And I think, you know, so the last 2 days of the meetings in Chicago were spent on media rights. I think they're finalizing the TV contract, which is a big deal because there's no playoff after the 2025 season. I don't know that a lot of fans understand that. There is nothing after the 2025 season. It doesn't exist. The playoff does not exist. So they need a TV contract, a binding agreement to make this a thing. So it's very important. So that's what they spent the last couple of days on. I think they heard from five different networks, and there's four or five more that are interested in it. So that's what they spent the time on. Next meeting, they'll discuss format. There's a thought that they're going to eventually, there's enough support to go to the 5+7 from the 6+6 option. So you'd have 5 automatic qualifiers and 7 at large. But there's some issues, right? There's things going out west with the 2-school conference, the Pac-2, that could kind of throw a wrench in things because you would still then have 10 leagues. And the CFP, I think, would consider that a league, even though it's 2 schools. And then you have Michael Resco, right, who's kind of putting up a fight to stay at 6-6. But, yes, realignment news. Realignment is not over. Sat down with one Mike Oresko, actually, about Army's candidacy to get into the American. And he took me through a little bit about the process. You know, I think they're in the finalization stages of getting this thing hammered out. He said the next few weeks it'll be done. Might be even quicker than that. But Army will join the American if all this gets straight as a football-only member, a 14th member. They'll still play the Army-Navy game, Oresko said, you know, but it will not count as a conference game. They'll play it on the traditional date and time, which comes a week after the AAC championship game. So they won't play in the regular season. The league has agreed not to pair them in the regular season and not to count their game in the conference standings. But they could play, if they end up finishing 1-2 in the league, they can play in the championship game and then would play again a week later. So it's really interesting how that might unfold. But there are some hurdles here. So, which does make this unique outside of the Army-Navy situation, which is unique enough. Army has a TV contract that runs through 2028 with the CBS Sports Network. So its home games will be owned by the CBS Sports Network for the first 5 years of the deal with the AAC, whose TV partner is ESPN. So that's really interesting. They're trying to work those details out. And then Army, as an independent, is scheduled out for like 5 to 10 years. So they've got to change all of these opponents that they have scheduled. So still some things to work through, but all things seem to be aimed at Army being the newest realignment mover.
There you go. There you go.
Can I ask a Roresco question real quick?
Uh-oh. Yes.
Like one day he's like, no, we need to go 5 plus 7. The next day he's like, no, yeah. 5, 6 plus 6. What was that about?
So, all right. We got to, they met Tuesday and Wednesday. And after Tuesday's meeting, Oresko came down and talked to us and said that he was for the 5 and 7. He was for moving from 6 automatic qualifiers to 5. You know, he said something like, we have to have the 5 plus 7. And then the morning after on Wednesday with a few of us, he clarified his comments. He meant to say he's for the switch from the 6 plus 6 to 5 plus 7, starting with the new contract in 2026. He wants the next 2 years to be the 6 plus 6, which would mean that you would get 2 group of 5 automatic qualifiers. And if you look at the last 10 years, the 6th automatic bid would go to a group of 5 team, probably unranked in that case. And I just cannot imagine the rest of the room standing for that, right? There's going to be an interesting debate there. Imagine I had to go back and look at some of the last 10 years of the results, but imagine like a unranked or a number 23 place Coastal Carolina getting in, you know, over a 10-2 Auburn, you know, and that's what would happen potentially, right? Or a 9-3, you know, Texas or something like that. I mean, that could happen in a 6 plus 6 with 9 conferences, right? The wrench in all this again is the Pac-2, because they're the champion of a 2-school conference. Qualify, we believe, they haven't really determined it yet, would qualify as a champion. Now, they'd have to be ranked high enough to be inside the top 6, the highest rank of the highest ranked champions, but it's possible, right? So that's an issue with all this as well.
The best part is that they have that loophole, because who the hell thought you had to write a rule that says you can't get in with a 2-team conference?
Yeah. And the NCAA. I will root
very hard for
come
that.
Come on.
To happen.
Oh, yeah. And it'll be, you know, Oregon State and Washington State, I think, are, you know, they're looking at all these options that we've discussed on the pod before. But one of them is to be, for at least a year, maybe two, to be a two school conference in their trying to patch together a schedule, kind of like an independent right now, trying to patch together these schedules. And so they kind of control their schedule, right? So, I mean, What if they go like 10-2 and are ranked like number 9, could get an automatic qualifying spot? It would be bizarre. And there's a lot that needs to be a discussion. It will be a serious discussion, I think, when CFP leaders meet again, probably in person in November. At some point, there'll be two discussions on that front. There'll be the revenue discussion. Does Washington State and Oregon State each get a cut of CFP Power 5 revenue, school revenue? They wouldn't get the whole package. They wouldn't split the base package that was given previously to the Pac-12, but they would potentially get an individual school package. And then there's the second thing is, do we recognize them as a conference? Is their champion, quote-unquote, eligible? You know, and they're surviving with this NCAA grace period, and Bill Hancock, the executive director of the CFP, said the CFP would probably give the same grace period, but he's not sure, and he didn't want to speculate, even though he did by saying that. but they haven't really discussed it yet. So,
my head hurts.
It's bizarre.
Make it 5-7. Crazy. All right, I got two stories. We're behind scheduling.
Yeah.
Although, do we have a schedule? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know that we have one. I suppose I'm supposed to know the schedule, and I don't. So. Double people's court, and it's football related, so it's okay. Not like we're going too far. Well, maybe in one of them, but this one, stuff is happening down in New Mexico. We have quote unquote P-gate. Video emerged. KOB TV 4 out of Albuquerque showed portions of a video over the weekend. On Sunday night, depicting what appears to be New Mexico State quarterback Diego Pavia urinating on a New Mexico Lobo logo in the middle of the New Mexico indoor practice facility. There is video of the New Mexico State quarterback inside the New Mexico practice facility taking a leak on the on the logo. Now, Oregon got mad because someone scuffed up the. I mean, there's nothing these guys like more than their logo.
Oh.
Scuff the logo, plant a flag in the logo, stand on the logo. Okay. I think a lot of it's a lot of crap, especially the one in the middle of the stadium. But yeah, I got to say, I mean, you're pissing on the one in the. Dude, we got to practice here, man.
How did I miss this?
New Mexico State has says they cannot comment because it involves a student. Really?
Okay.
And if there is any penalty, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
What exactly would a school comment on other than students? Aren't you just anyway? I don't know. It's like asking the military. Could you comment how the war is going? We don't talk about military initiatives. I don't know. If there is internal discipline, it'll be handled internally, whatever. Okay, so let's assume this is... He also flips off one of the logos, which that logo got a lot better than this one.
Yeah.
Okay, if you're New Mexico State, and this is true, Diego Pavia did urinate on the logo of the... Okay, what is your punishment? Okay, what is your punishment? Bronze statue outside the stadium to celebrate this guy or kicked off the team. And we will note this has gotten heated down there and tragically. Well, so there was a huge brawl last year during the football game.
Yeah.
And then the basketball player from New Mexico State during a trip to Albuquerque got lured out and jumped in a fight. And he was carrying a weapon, which was his own problem, shot and killed a guy. A New Mexico student. So this rivalry is way too heated.
Yes.
We're talking about Ohio State, Michigan. No one has killed each other. No one is, I mean, way too heated. But for the sake of, let's just put that aside because we're about stupid laughs and cheap laughs here. What is the punishment, Pat Forty?
Well, I would say New Mexico State is tempting New Mexico to say, we ain't playing you anymore, which would be a damn shame. But New Mexico State is actually beating New Mexico in football now, so New Mexico really might not want to play them, because if you can't beat your in-state quote-unquote little brother, who can you beat? Anyway, the internal punishment here will be, Diego, nice job. Good job, man.
You should have took now instead.
We'll put out a public statement saying we're very disappointed in Diego's actions. This was not representative of what New Mexico State is all about, or our feelings towards our friends up the road, up I-25, I-10, whatever. But behind the scenes, Diego's getting every round bought for him in Las Cruces for the rest of his career.
Yeah. Now, I've already played, by the way, and New Mexico State won 27-17.
Yes. That's it, yeah.
So he's not now getting, like, waiting to get, you know, speared after every – it's going to be very ugly. If I'm Diego, I'm hitting the portal.
Does he have eligibility left next
year? I don't know. I'll look it up.
I'm trying to imagine him then building a statue and it'd be of him, you know, peeing and there being a fountain, you know, coming off.
Be a perfect fountain statue.
In the fountain, you know, fountain the water would splash onto a New Mexico logo. You know, being on the logo.
Diego is a junior Quick Lane Bowl MVP last year.
MVP. Wow.
When Jerry wore the Serape into the stadium.
Yeah. Yeah. I forgot about that. That 11 a.m. game in downtown Detroit day after Christmas or whatever. Ross, quickly, your vote on this statue, it seems like.
Actually, statue. Disappointed. Statue.
He didn't do even more.
He didn't do number two. Yeah. Number one, I mean, anybody can do number one, really, you know.
So. I don't really hear too much about this. I really don't hear too much about the starting quarterback of one team. Can you imagine the scandal if J.J. McCarthy slipped into
Woody?
Into the Woody Center and urinated. It's beyond the scale. It's only not that big of a deal because it occurred in New Mexico. That's it. Okay. All right. Everybody sent us this, so we're going to do this. A guy, Philadelphia Phillies game, but this guy could show up at a Penn State game. He could show up at a Temple game. We don't know.
Temple seems quite possible.
A guy named Joseph Henney of Jonestown, Pennsylvania, showed up. He wanted to watch the Phillies and the Pirates play a baseball game. He brought his emotional support alligator named Wally. He's actually done stories. He has depression. He had cancer. Wally has helped him through. There's pictures in the Daily Mail of him cuddling with Wally on a couch. Wally is his friend. The Phillies denied him entrance to the game because of the alligator. They said the alligator was not an acceptable emotional support animal. They have different ones you are allowed to bring. Certified service dogs. Are welcome. All other animals are prohibited. Do you side with the Phillies? If he shows up at a Penn State game, Jonestown, not that far from State College, should they let him in with the alligator?
What if he showed up at an LSU game with the alligator? Right, I think they'd be like, come on in. I mean, they just do it all the time.
Florida.
Come on in.
Florida.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, my feelings on emotional support animals are well known.
Yeah.
I am completely team Phillies here. I saw the picture of the alligator owner. He's got one of those, like, super old school blurry forearm tattoos like you got in the Navy in the 1960s. So, I mean, this dude's... Yeah, right. Yeah. But no, I'm sorry. The alligator may be your friend. That doesn't mean your friend gets to go to the ballpark. Send the alligator home. And if that's too much for you, send your cell phone. Get out. No.
I would love to agree with Pat because I travel enough, and I think we all do, where you're sitting on a plane and, you know, a dog walks by or a cat or a monkey one time.
I mean, Flirty the horse.
On a plane?
Flirty the horse.
And so I'm not for this emotional support stuff. But in this case... I am. I'm all for alligators being allowed in any ballpark.
Oh my God.
As a Louisiana boy, let in the Gator, Phillies. Come on.
So, you know, I mean, this is basically what they tried to blame the Cubs losing on. Not that the Cubs management sucked
for like
two generations, but they brought a billy goat to the game and they said, no, you're not allowed in with your billy goat. And so they called it the curse of the billy goat. I thought it was a reasonable decision by the Cubs in 1946 or whatever it was. I think this is a reasonable, but I'm hoping there is not a Wally the Alligator curse put on the Phillies. Probably just the Braves are really good. I don't know. All right. Enough. We got to pick some games. If everyone hadn't gone crazy about that one, I wouldn't have. I normally wouldn't do a goofy. We're long. We got so much going on. They said nothing was happening this weekend in college football. They were wrong. All right. Let's pick it. Race for the case. Oh, by the way, we do have the standings. We'll actually have them tallied out.
No, actually, let's read out the standings.
Sean, 16-10-1, first place. Ross, 15-11-1. Pat, 10-16-1. I guess we don't have a score for me. I'm not sure what.
No, we do.
No,
we do. 8-18-1.
Ooh.
Yeah, I haven't been picking very good. I haven't really been. Yeah, I'm letting you guys get out to a little lead. Here I come.
Is the standings from youngest to oldest? Is that what we've done here?
No.
Oh, is Pat older than you? Oh, damn.
He's much older than me.
I look all much right. younger.
Much older.
Yeah. Miles on the tire, buddy.
All right, we're doing a speed round. Speed picking here?
Yeah, speed picking. Yeah. Number 10, Utah at number 19, Oregon State. Oregon State's giving 3. Game is Friday night on FS1. Nice little game on Friday night to get your weekend started. Pat, who you got?
Man, it's hard to pick against Utah. They are so solid. They're so tough. But without Cam Rising in the lineup, we don't know whether he's going to play. That's been kind of this hanging question. I'm taking the Beavers at home, and I'm laying the 3. But, boy, that's a close one. I think that's a very good line. I'll take the Beavers, though. Win cover.
Yeah, I want to pick Oregon State at home so bad. I can't do it. I can't pick against Utah and its defense. They've allowed, I think, like 40 points in 4 games or something like that. So give me Utah to cover the 3.5.
Dan, I appreciate you airing out my lead. I'm sure it won't disappear now that everybody knows. I'll go with Utah to cover the 3 in this game.
I can't bet. This is why I have 8-18-1, because how do you pick when you don't know who's quarterback? Wait till the end to pick this. I'll take Oregon State right now. I don't know. That's a tough game. All right, number 8, USC at Colorado. USC is giving 21.5. Game is at noon on Fox. Give me my theme music, Ross.
I think this was the same spread for the Oregon game, wasn't it? It was like 20.5, 20-21. And that wasn't close. I think this one's going to be closer, but not that close, right? So give me USC to maybe barely cover here. It'll be kind of a shootout type of 51-35-30 thing or something like that. So give me a barely cover for the Trojans.
I'm taking the Buffaloes to barely cover. I do think that there's going to be plenty of points. The USC defense looks a lot like the USC defense has looked. And so I think that Colorado, as long as you can protect Shedeur Sanders, will find some holes in the defense. USC will miss some tackles. USC will blow some coverages. And Colorado will score enough to not be just run off the field the way they were in Eugene. I also think the atmosphere will be back, altitude, all those factors. And I will say this, because the big fast revisionist history on Colorado's 3-0 start was, well, God, every team they played sucked. They all sucked. Guess what? They're all undefeated since they lost to Colorado. TCU, 3-0. Nebraska, 2-0. Colorado State, 1-0. So it's not like those teams completely suck. Give Colorado a little bit of credit, and I think they at least rally up and lose by 14 or so to the Trojans.
I'm going to go with the Buffs here. USC did not look good against Arizona State. That game was much closer than the final score indicates. I know they won by 2 scores, but that defense was mighty scary, letting Arizona State hang around for as long as they did. Colorado, I think, has an opportunity to lose by at least less than three scores to USC. So I'll go with the Buffs.
Buffs are going to score a couple points. USC will score almost every time, but I'm going to take Colorado. That's a lot at home. You don't need a lot of stops to hold up on 21.5. I think they get them. Game's also really early. I just think it's going to be a little bit of a tricky game. So I'll take Colorado with those points. Number one, Georgia at Auburn. Georgia giving 14.5, 3:30 on CBS. Pat.
Yeah, Georgia finally leaves home, and I think they're going to be ready. I think they've been a little bit bored. I think that they bring out the full Georgia experience on Auburn, whose offense is very bad. And so I think Georgia comes into Jordan-Hare and takes care of business, wins by more than 14.5, and I'm not sure whether Auburn can score more than 7, period.
Yeah, take the under, huh? This one over under is at 45.5. This feels like it's going to be like this old school, low scoring, like 18-9 type of game. I think it's going to be close enough and low scoring enough for Auburn to cover 14.5. So give me the Tigers at home to cover this one in like a nasty, 20-13 type of game.
I could see Georgia trying to come out here and remind everyone who the number one team in the nation is. And shutting down Auburn at Auburn would be a huge statement, just as a reminder for the country. So I'll go with Georgia covering the spread.
Yeah, me too. I'll take Georgia. Auburn's quarterback play and offense was horrible against A&M. They did not score an offensive touchdown. They played three quarterbacks. Peyton Thorne was not good, 6 of 12 for 44 yards. Charles Barkley went on Next Round Live and said he made note of Hugh Freeze get baptized one of his players the other day.
Yeah.
Sylvester Smith, he said, yep, gave him a baptism. This would be like the weird thing if you try to tell a European about college football. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like the coach also baptized
a European. Imagine telling somebody in the Pacific Northwest that this happened.
Well, okay, right. There you go. Right.
Somebody in Massachusetts. They baptize you.
Right. It's just sort of like, yeah, of course he baptized them. That's what college football coaches do. I don't know. Yeah, it doesn't make sense, but it does. Anyway, Barkley said, I will say this. And when Charles Barkley says, I will say this, it's usually going to be pretty good. If you all are going to be down there baptizing people, please pray for us. Pray for better quarterback play. Let's get these three quarterbacks and baptize them, and maybe the Lord can make them play better, because one thing you can't do is... I don't know whether the QBs are going to get baptized and thus play better with Barkley, but they better. I'm taking Georgia in that one. All right, number 13, LSU at number 20, Ole Miss. LSU is giving 2.5, 6 p.m. on ESPN. Ross.
Y'all have left me on an island the last two.
There you go.
I'm scared I'm going to be on an island on this one, too. I've been going back and forth on this game. LSU 2.5 on the road. It's going to be rowdy there. It's a night game. LSU probably talent-wise should win. So I'm going to go with the Tigers to cover it, but I don't feel real good about it.
Okay.
Pat. LSU wins, covers, the grown-up coach beats the not grown-up coach.
Ooh, little shots fired.
Spicy.
Sean?
Yeah, I'll go with LSU here. Ole Miss looked so flat and so little brother last week that it was just – it's not enough. It's not enough for me to say that they're going to beat LSU, who, if they're firing on all cylinders, is still a very, very good team. So I'll go with LSU to cover.
A week ago, I thought Ole Miss had a better team than Alabama. Mm-hmm. Boy, was I wrong. I'll take LSU. Ole Miss going to have to show me something. Number 11, Notre Dame at number 17, Duke. Notre Dame is giving 6, hopefully playing 11. 7:30 on ABC. Pat Forty, who you got?
I got a story on SI about the vagaries of getting 11 people on the field reliably at all times. This also was discovered against Tennessee State week 2. Notre Dame had 10 on the field and nearly gave up a touchdown. And Tyler Horka, who covers the team, tweeted, "They can't do this against better teams." That was fairly prescient. So I am sure Notre Dame will have the right number of good players on the field. I am not sure they will have the better team on the field. I'm going to take Duke in the points. Huge game for them. They're coming off of UConn, which was a milk run. Notre Dame's coming off a 60-minute war. The last time Notre Dame played Ohio State, they came out of that staggering and lost to Marshall. So I'm going to go ahead and take the Blue Devils at home to keep their nice little story rolling, or at least to cover the six.
Another defensive dogfight. I can't believe the over-under on this one is at over 50. It's 52.5. Gosh. Take the under. These two teams got two of the best defenses in the country. And at home, and that spread just seems high to me. Game day there, everything going right for the Blue Devils. Mike Elko's defense has been maybe the best in the country. 28 points in four games. Unbelievable. Sorry. 35 points in four games. Close enough. Nobody scored more than 14. They've been incredible. Give me Duke to have a really low scoring game and not just cover the 5.5. I think they beat the Irish.
My Notre Dame source is on to me. Keeping the cards close to the vest this week. This is going to be a tough read. It's tough because I think Sam Hartman comfortable in the Carolinas playing here. I don't think he's going to be terribly intimidated by Duke, but there's so much pressure on Notre Dame to be perfect in all of their execution. Just all the outside noise. I think it's too much pressure sitting on them to just execute everything as they should. So I'll go with Duke to cover.
I'm taking Notre Dame. I think they rally behind Freeman, but boy, it could go the other way too. I think they're a much better team. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what they do. They could also be not happy. We're going to find out real quick in that game. All right. Lock of the week time. Anyone prepare and have a lock of the week?
Of course not.
I got one.
There you go. All right.
I'm ready. Pat. I'm ready. All right.
Get it done.
Louisville, NC State. Louisville is a 3.5-point favorite. 4-0. They've been playing really well. But not so fast, my friend. I think at home the Wolfpack covers that 3.5. So give me NC State. I think my locks have been going really well lately. I believe I'm 1-3. So just put all your money on the Wolfpack.
All right, I got one. I've got one quickly. It didn't take me long to find it because I've been circling this game actually since before the season started. Give me Syracuse as a dome dog, getting 6.5 against Clemson. I just am not impressed with Clemson. Clemson's coming off a overtime slobber knocker against Florida State. They're going on the road. They're playing a good team that's undefeated, that has a really good defense and a good quarterback in Garrett Schrader. And Syracuse always gives Clemson problems. So I am once again going to say Syracuse is going to give Clemson problems and will at least cover the 6.5, if not win outright.
I'm going to go with the just absolute wagon that is Washington, giving 18.5 to Arizona. I have no fear of Arizona in this. Michael Penix Jr. is on fire. The offense is on fire. It seems too good to be true, and let's just hope it is.
They are an absolute wagon, that's for sure.
I really wanted to pick BC and Virginia Tech just out of the sheer absurdity. Or Virginia, I'm sorry, Virginia.
I always
want
to do that to the audience.
What a game. BC 3.5. That could be the over-under also. No, the over-under is 54.5. I don't know if this is a lock or not. I'm not giving up on Illinois. They got beat soundly by Kansas. They got beat by Penn State. I still think they're a pretty good team. I don't like Purdue. Purdue's giving 1 point at home. I think because they're at home, they're getting 1 point. I don't expect this to be some wild crowd. I think Illinois is going to win the football game. And if it's 1 point, you're going to win it, or at least push. So I am going to take Illinois as my lock of the week because I think they will still have a decent schedule. So where I'm at with that. Decent season. So
quote, I don't like Purdue. That's an evergreen quote from Dan Wetzel right there.
Well, that's other situations. Sometimes I like their team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Illinois is walking in, looking at that drum and scoffing. They're just scoffing. Anyway, I'm taking Illinois to beat Purdue. I don't know what a weird lock of the week that was. But, hey, that's what happens when you pick it at the last minute. All right. Long show. Appreciate everyone. The alligator really threw us off. The alligator threw us off. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing, leaving us nice reviews, and telling your friends about us. Hope you all have a terrific football weekend. We will be back either late Sunday, certainly by Monday morning, whatever time you get up for your commute, and with the overreaction. And everyone enjoy their weekend. We will talk to you later.